My name is John Shriver. I work at Planetary Resources. We were and still are an asteroid mining company, which kind of begs the question, what are we doing at an agronomy conference? Over the last 5 years, we've done a lot of work developing space technology and a sensor suite that we could send to near-Earth asteroids to evaluate the water content on those asteroids and then figure out, you know, what the best way to extract it from that distant remote location would be. And as we were talking to people in the remote sensing community, as we talked about, you know, looking for water content, being able to figure out what the soils of an asteroid might look like, what are their texture, what's their particle grain size, all those things, people kept talking to us about how the same technology suite we were developing for this kind of long shot asteroid mining mission could be applicable and really valuable much closer to home, especially within agriculture. So I previously worked at another farming or agriculture startup, and I've been working in the agriculture industry for a while. They brought me on about a year ago to start figuring out, through field work, through working with industry partners, how can the sensor suite that we've been building for asteroid mining be valuable for agriculture today. So first, just to give you a little bit of background on where we're actually operating within the spectra, we've been working in the midwave infrared. Midwave infrared is not a very popular Earth observation part of the spectra for some pretty good reasons. But we've been working between 3 and 5 microns, which is an area that has a pretty high sensitivity to both water content and then also a very strong thermal signal, but with a higher signal, so more photons actually being emitted from things in the Earth observation kind of bandwidth, so giving us a higher spatial resolution than the traditional thermal infrared would. But there's this little problem that the sun emits radiation in the midwave infrared at about the same order of magnitude as terrestrial targets do. So whenever you're looking at something, a midwave infrared image, there are a couple bands on MODIS, a couple bands on, or one band on AVHRR. What you see is that you have this mixed signal for any daytime image, where you're getting reflected radiation from the sun, as well as a thermal signal from whatever you're looking at on the Earth. To dig into this a little bit more, this is a ModTrans simulation for our study area, which is in central Washington. Across the spectra that we've been looking at, which is 3.4 microns to 5.1 microns. And you can see the green line here in the lower part of the spectra, that's the reflected radiation. It's about the same across that part of the bandpass as the blue line, which is the emitted thermal signal. And then you have this carbon dioxide absorption band right in the middle of that bandpass. And then on the upper part of it, you get mostly emitted signal, so mostly a thermal signal, what you traditionally see in the thermal infrared. For a common agricultural scene, what this means is that roughly a third of your signal is reflected sunlight, and about two-thirds of your signal is emitted thermal radiation. So we thought that this was a very promising area to look at, but there would be some work for us to do to actually extract that thermal signal and separate it from that reflected signal before it would be useful as a traditional thermal type of image. Just to give you a taste of what this looks like when you're actually looking at midwave infrared images, these are a couple of images from our aerial campaign. These were collected from a Cessna 172 from a little aerial pod that we put onto the bottom of it. It has a spatial resolution of about 2.5 meters. And you can see in the daytime image, there's a pretty distinct difference between the agricultural land, that center pivot there, and then the natural landscape around it. This is a recently tilled and planted wheat field that had also been recently watered. Similar to what you're going to see in the kind of visual wavelength, midwave infrared light is less reflective from wet soils than it is from dry soils, and it's also cooler than a dry soil would be, and so that's why it's darker than the area around it. You can also see some kind of dark regions within that field. I'm not sure how well it shows up on the screen there, but you can see some of the wheel tracks within the center pivot area. And then when you go and look at the night image, this is collected at about 11 o'clock at night, so after the field had cooled off from the daytime, you see this really bright region right in the middle of that field, and that's actually standing water. So one of the things that we were pretty excited about that you could do with these day-night pairs of midwave infrared images is you could see how when the field is warm, when everything's been heated by the sun throughout the day, you can look and see for variations within areas that should be relatively homogeneous. And then at night, things like this really poor drainage area within the middle of that field where it's standing water, and then you can see some of the damp soils around it. Those areas really jumped out at you as well. So this is something we thought would be interesting to dig into more, but before you could take this, show it to a grower, and actually expect them to do something worthwhile with it, we really wanted to put in the work to do some field trials and to work with some growers throughout a growing season to figure out what would be valuable for them in this context. So over the 2016 growing season, we had an aerial campaign with two foci. One was just looking at canopy. We wanted to understand how well we could use midwave infrared thermal signal to do what a lot of people have done with thermal infrared in the past. And the reason for this is that that thermal infrared, a lot of what you're getting from remote sensing platforms, is fairly coarse imagery, about 100 meters or larger, just because of the size the sensor has to be to actually collect enough photons to get something valuable for a thermal signal. With the midwave, like I said earlier, you could have a smaller spatial resolution, potentially giving you something more versatile in an agricultural context. The other thing we wanted to focus on post-season was bare soil. How can we use our bare soil imagery to talk about two different things? One, what are the soils made of? Can we look at differences in soil texture or soil type? And two, could we use those day-night image pairs to talk about relative soil moisture distribution, or maybe absolute soil moisture distribution within a field? Both of those things are something that we heard could be valuable for growers and for folks in the agriculture industry and in research. And so that's what we set out to do over the 2016 growing season. As I mentioned earlier, our study area is in central Washington. We were in the Moses Lake area. Not sure how familiar you guys are with that region. But it's a pretty diverse agricultural production area, almost entirely irrigated. You can see a lot of center pivots in this image here. There's also some furrow irrigated areas at the top. There's a wide variety of crops that are grown, field corn, sweet corn, peas, lentils, different kinds of beans, so red beans, dry beans, and then some permanent crops like apple orchards and some stone fruit and grapes. We worked with a number of growers throughout the season. This is an image of one of the fields that we worked on. It's an organically managed corn field, all sandy soils that had recently been converted from a natural landscape into an agricultural production system. I think it had been about 2 years under production. Before that, it had just been sagebrush and desert. And this is one of the first images that we took of that that field. It was about V3, so the corn wasn't too high. Canopy hadn't fully developed yet. And we were talking to the grower and didn't really have much of an idea of what we'd be able to do from an agronomic, a practical agronomic perspective with this imagery. So we took this image to him and sat down and started to talk with him. And a few things really jumped out at us right away. One, you can see the edges of a bunch of other fields around our actual study field that are much, much cooler, much lower radiance than the area we were actually looking at. Those were all full canopy potato fields. And so instantly we were able to see, you know, full canopy, as we'd expect, looks cooler in this imagery than the bare soil with a little bit of corn on it did. The next thing that kind of jumped out was you see that pie shape at the bottom, center pivot irrigated field that had been running for a little while when we took the image. That is the area that had been wet down. So as I mentioned earlier, less reflectance from the reflected solar radiation, and then also cooler than the bare soil that had been heated by the sun would be. So none of that really blew us away and isn't actually that useful to a grower. So when we started to dig in deeper, we noticed a couple of these blue splotches throughout the field. In this image, they're blue. And then some yellow kind of lines that run across, I guess, the left half of the screen there, if you're looking at it. And so we went out and scouted those parts of the field. Those turned out to be weed patches. As this had been recently converted to agricultural production from a natural landscape, there's quite a seed bank that's still in the soil. And so we went out in this organic field. They had some huge problems with weeds in those areas, and they had actually closed canopy for some of those broadleaf weeds. And so we were actually seeing a closed weed canopy come off of the soil background that showed up as cooler. The other thing that we were able to pick out are those kind of red bands that you can see across horizontally across the image. When they had cleared the land and then leveled the land for production, there are actually these 6-foot sand dunes on the sides of the field that you can go up and see a cross-section of. They're made of a coarse black sand, where the rest of the field is made of a much finer textured brown sand. And so we were able to see how some of the texture and then soil composition differences within the field would show up in terms of their midway response. So it was interesting for us, but you know, we were just starting to get our feet wet with this image. Later in the season, this is on a different field. We worked with an agronomy company as well, just to help us get an understanding of the lay of the land, agricultural production kind of practices within the area. And they had just recently hired a contractor to apply manure to a bunch of organically managed fields. And they were concerned that there was a problem with the equipment. And so they asked us to collect some images of a couple of the fields that this person had been working on. And sure enough, you can see these streaks that kind of run diagonally across the field, across the whole center pivot area. And I think as anyone who's worked in remote sensing before has kind of picked up, Straight lines tend to be man-made, they don't tend to be natural, and in agriculture it usually means some sort of management problem. And sure enough, I'm not sure what the what was going on with the equipment the day that they'd applied the manure, but these parts of the field were pretty nutrient-stressed. And the way that that came out in our midwave imagery was as a warmer region of the field in that nutrient-stressed area, as opposed to the much healthier areas that weren't nutrient-stressed, that are the darker areas in between. So when we showed the agronomy company this, they were pretty happy to have something to take back to their producer and show them what had gone on. But what they didn't expect to see were the two other things that we found within the field. One, you can see in the top there are these much darker red areas on that sandy soil. Again, it's that coarse black soil. And what we hypothesized is going on after talking to the grower was that because it's so much coarser than the rest of the field, its ability to hold on to water, kind of like was mentioned earlier, it was the water was just draining right out of that soil profile. So while they had set up their irrigation rates to kind of match the dominant soil type of the field, in these other areas, that led to a significant amount of stress in that crop, which leads to the idea of maybe variable rate irrigation, or at least upping your irrigation rate on that slice of the pile when you're in those areas that are dominated by those other soils. The other thing that we pointed out is, and again, I'm not sure how well it shows up on this projector, but you can see these ring features within that center pivot. And what it was is that one of the nozzles had become clogged. It was still spraying water, so when the grower visually inspected it, water was coming out of it, but it was putting out water at a lesser rate than it should have been, leading to some water stress on the crop in the area being watered by that nozzle. When we pointed this out to the grower, they were actually able to go out into the field that season, clean it out, and then return the center pivot to the level of operation it should have been operating at. All this was great for us. We were really excited to see that we could actually make a difference during the growing season. But to be honest, this was a bit of a fishing expedition for us. We didn't know what we would expect to see during this part of this full canopy part of the season. And while we learned a lot and we can start to set up some experiments for next year, it wasn't exactly the type of rigorous science that we wanted to do when we were evaluating this instrument. The good thing is that we had the whole season to plan for our soil moisture experiment. So working with another grower, we talked about what we were hoping to do, which is be able to understand how valuable is our midwave instrument when we actually extract the temperature signal from the day and the night images for detecting variation in soil moisture. So we talked to the grower, here's a picture of the field that we worked on, and asked him to apply a range of different irrigation amounts across the field, and we worked on this about 45 degree section of the center pivot. At the high end, we had him apply an inch of water, and the low end about 0.2 inches of water. And what we then did is we went out and collected the imagery and started to see, you know, how well can our midwave sensor detect the differences here. We applied the water on October 4th, gave it a day to reach equilibrium, and then collected our imagery at about noon on October 5th, and then at about 9 o'clock at night on October 5th as well for a day-night image pair. Here's the soil moisture samples that we collected. We collected on a 10-meter kind of line along the 3rd, 4th, 5th, and 7th wheel track. We then interpolated those points along the wheel tracks and rasterized the data so we'd be able to compare it more easily to our imagery. There was a slight terrain variation on the field. It wasn't huge, but it was enough that we wanted to be able to take it into account when we were looking at both our thermal imagery and on any potential impacts it would have on the soil moisture distribution within the field. As you can see, it had the highest elevation kind of near the center of the center pivot, and then it sloped down toward the edge, leaving a large kind of flat area. You can see the dark blue in the slope, and it's kind of like a yellowish hue in that aspect map in the majority of our study area. So the first thing that we did when we looked at our soil moisture data that we'd collected and compared it to the terrain, two things. First, we just looked at our soil moisture data and compared it to the actual water application amounts. We were a little bit surprised to see that the places that we had applied the most water actually had the lowest overall soil moisture. That caught us off guard, to be honest. Our hypothesis there is that you can see it's also the most sloped part of the field, but again, the slopes weren't huge. So we're guessing that either the water ran down the slope or just infiltrated much more quickly, leading to those lower soil moisture values within those regions. But it also could have been an irrigation malfunction on the center pivot or something else. So that was the first thing that we kind of jumped out at us. On the three lower application areas, we did see something more similar to what we'd expect. So from 0.2 to 0.6 inches, adding more water did give us higher soil moisture. Here are the actual midwave images that we collected. The first thing that jumped out at me is looking at that daytime image. So you see those splotchy patterns on the bottom here. The reason I mentioned a potential malfunction with the center pivot device was that we had asked the grower to apply a region with no or a zero-inch water application on the bottom part of that study area. The center pivot didn't take too kindly to the sudden pressure drop and actually applied water in some places, no water in other places. And it was kind of a mess there at the bottom, so we excluded that part from our study. The thing that I thought was pretty neat, though, is that looking at this nighttime image, you can actually see the pattern of the end gun, both in our study field and in the field next to it. So some pretty interesting details, again, that jump out of the images. But to do our study properly, what we needed to do was to extract the temperature from the radiance values that we collected. So we did that using this radiance transfer equation for the midwave infrared. We modeled the upwelling, the downwelling, and the atmospheric transmittance using Modtran. And then for the emissivity of the soil, what we did is we went to the astrospectral library and found a soil that matched the percent sand, silt, and clay most closely to our actual soil, and then looked at some of the contextual geology of both our soil region and then the soils that we kind of matched our profile. And what we settled on was this dark, I think it's brown to dark brown sand. As I mentioned earlier, the emissivity of a soil changes as you apply water to it. So we modeled the emissivity of a wet soil by mixing the emissivity of water and our dry soil to give us that wet soil spectrum. When we actually converted the images to temperature, these are the maps that we got. You can see the daytime image has a lot more variation in it than the nighttime image does. And it actually matched our aspect map relatively well. So you can see the area, that kind of reddish, yellow, green area in the daytime image, that's the highest temperature area. That's actually the part that's on the hill slope as well. So the aspect there was much different than it was in that cooler part of the field. The nighttime image had far less variation than the daytime image, which makes a certain amount of sense that as you cool throughout the day, as we hope it would cool throughout the day, it would kind of be more homogeneous. One thing that I do want to point out, though, in this image is that you can see that the average temperatures in the nighttime image are higher than they are in the daytime image. This also caught us off guard. Our assumption here is that because we had heavy clouds come in between the time our daytime image was collected and when our nighttime image was collected, that actually held the heat in, keeping the soils from cooling as they normally would have after the sun set. We collected our nighttime image in a break in the clouds before even heavier cloud cover rolled in later. But you can see that the delta temperature map is mostly driven by the variation that's within that daytime image. So, our results. First, we were a little surprised and, to be honest, disappointed to see that the correlation between the change in temperature that we saw and the soil moisture within the field wasn't as strong as we had hoped. There are a couple of things that I think may lead to this that I'll get into in a moment, but this was a good check for us to be able to think about how we were modeling the actual response of midwave imagery and the midwave signal in the soils and the soil moisture to what we were expecting, and maybe some more work needs to be done to actually model that process. And like I mentioned earlier, we saw an increase in temperature in a lot of parts of the field from between the day and the nighttime images. Our hypothesis was that the cooler parts of the field, or that the wettest parts of the field, would be the more steady state in terms of their temperature, that they would gain heat more slowly and then lose that heat less more slowly, so we have a more constant temperature than the dry areas of the field that would heat up quickly and then cool off quickly when you took away the solar radiation. And that's not actually what we found. We found that the wettest parts of the field continued to add heat throughout the day, and that the least dry parts of the field were the ones that had almost no temperature change. And so in thinking about why that might have happened, we again went back to our terrain maps and started to think about how terrain may influence our thermal imagery. And what we found is that the parts of the field that behaved the least like we would expect, those two kind of troublesome high water application areas, also had very distinct average aspects in terms of their aspect tended to be closer to 75, between 75 and 150, whereas for most of the study area, the aspect was zero. And so when we excluded the aspects that were above 70, there was a bimodal distribution on the aspects. So most aspects were around zero, then there was a flat spot, and then we had a bump in the parts of the field that had an aspect between 70 and I think 175. When we thresholded that data to have an aspect of 70 or less, the strength of the relationship did increase significantly. What this pointed out to us is that we weren't really doing what we needed to correct for terrain effects in that thermal imagery. and to be able to understand better how to take that imagery that we were collecting and then compare different parts of a field that, to be honest, didn't have dramatic relief, but had enough that it was obviously influencing our study results. So what comes next? For us, there are a few things. One, we think that there's something here that's worth looking into more, but we need to do more research to figure out the right way to actually harness it, to do some actual practical guidance for a grower. What we'd like to be able to do with this is use it for irrigation timing and to be able to look at variation within a scene or within a field, to be able to think about how, similar to that full canopy image we showed earlier, how do we know when those parts of the field that have a different soil texture, maybe just don't hold on to the water for one reason or another, to be able to let us know when that part of the field isn't getting irrigated enough. So there's more work we need to do to be able to take that terrain into account, to be able to correct that out. And the other thing that we want to be able to do is have a better way to estimate the emissivity than just having a flat emissivity assumption for the whole field. And so one of the big things we're excited about for next season is that we're going to be deploying a multi-band midwave system into the field to allow us to use more of a split window approach to estimate emissivity at a pixel level. We're also going to expand our field testing by finding industry partners to be able to leverage their agronomic expertise so that we can focus on what we do the best, which is the remote sensing, and not have as much guesswork about how what we're doing could be useful to a grower. We had an announcement with Bayer a couple of months ago, and we're working on a couple of other industry partnerships for the season ahead. The other thing that we're pretty excited about is that we are a spacecraft company, and so we're launching our orbital pathfinder in early 2017, and so it'll be a broadband midwave sensor that we're going to be putting into orbit, which is a real technical milestone for us in terms of developing a constellation, and allows us to gather data much more broadly, so instead of just focused on one part of the world, we can kind of have a global data collection. Picture of our satellite, pretty proud of it. And if you have any questions, I'd love to answer them now.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much.
The soil moisture one or the full canopy one?
Well, the last part here where you're looking at, where you had done the different irrigation applications.
There was no biomass. So I can show you the picture of the field. I can go back to it. It was bare dirt. So they were getting ready to put in a winter wheat crop. Okay. It had been a corn crop that had been harvested and tilled. And so that was something we were pretty interested in, was just getting the bare soil response. Between the weed canopy and the potato canopy? Yeah, my guess is that because the weeds were, they were a broadleaf weed, but they were very short in stature, so there wasn't a lot of space actually between the soil surface and the weed. They tended to be the kind that kind of spreads out quickly. And so a well-regulated canopy, at least in my kind of experience, is able to have a couple different tiers of air that's being managed by the canopy itself. And so that potato, you had at least two layers of vegetation that was able to kind of mitigate the impact of the sun. So to intercept all that radiation and then have evaporative cooling over a couple of different levels. Whereas the weeds, it was just that surface. And they were also much smaller and thinner. So the potato crop was pretty robust at the time that we were out there. And the weeds were still, maybe as high as my ankles. So.
Another question? For the stress detection, did you compare the midwave infrared imagery to visible near infrared, any vegetation indices or anything like that, and was there any correspondence?
We did. So I actually had that slide in earlier and dropped it. I compared it to RapidEye, NDVI, and WDRVI from RapidEye. And what we found is that unfortunately, we weren't able to get a midwave image and a visible near-infrared image on the same day, but we had visible near-infrared images from 5 days prior and then 9 days after what we collected. And so the five-day prior NDVI image and WDRVI image, you could see some of the striping due to the manure misapplication, and you could see a little bit of the soil, but you couldn't see the actual irrigation problem. Some of that could have been due to spatial resolution differences. Our image had a much stronger kind of response from the manure misapplication and the soils. which is very, very similar to the image that was 9 days after ours. So one of the things that we would want to look into more next year would be figuring out, is there a timing benefit to using the thermal imagery as opposed to just the infrared and visible imagery? And that's an open question for us.
Timing is everything.
Timing is
speaking of that,
everything.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Very much.